Hello, everyone. Hello and good evening. I'm Kate.
Blog Talk Radio.
And we are just about ready to go on the air. And anyway, Kate Thompson here. Kate Thompson here giving you a closer look on different issues, on different topics, on different things to talk about. Welcome to the Kay and Gus Show here. We invite you each Wednesday to listen every Wednesday from 8 until 9 p.m. as we take a closer look at exciting news, information, education, and global communication issues. We try to bring you things that are extremely interesting and things that you should know and you want to know. And this is the kind of show that you need to get a pencil and always have a pencil in hand because of the fact that there's so many things that we're going to be talking about. You will want to take down numbers and take notes and all that sort of thing. And before we go any further, Gus is, he is not feeling well. He's not well, and I'll be seeing him sometime tomorrow. So I'm, going to be wishing him well, and tomorrow we'll keep giving you an update on Gus Henneberg, everyone. We want to tell you who is on the show tonight because it's going to be really fantastic. I love it. Good friends of mine. Betty Neals is here, everyone. Betty is from Newark, New Jersey. And she is a good friend of mine, and she is a poet, and she is an actress, and she is a writer. Betty, hi.
Hello. How are you?
I'm so fine. Nice
to be here.
We practically grew up together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Way before marriage our children and college, and we were still dreamers then.
We're getting older.
Yes. Hey, we're blessed.
I'm telling you, I am really telling you. But you have been doing so many exciting things, as a poet and as an actress and stage roles, and I'm going to be giving that out in very short, in film, in television, on stage and whatnot. The American Globe Theater, La Mama Experimental Theater, 12 Miles West Theater, Billie Holiday Theater, the American Theater of Harlem, African Globe Theater, I said that, television, Vicki Vance Productions, Tribute to Mothers. Yeah, okay. On Channel 5, a New Jersey poet, poetry reading, film in the first person. Leotard Signature, is that?
Yes.
That's an interesting title there. And then commercials, Clairol. And tell us, I laughed because I did a commercial one time, and if you snap your finger, you can see me.
Well, this one was a print.
You're lucky. But I still got paid. I got paid for a couple of years for it because we went to different areas.
Well,
And you're training at New York University, the Stanislavski Method, stage movement and voice with Leon and Martin at the Meniscus Arts Mankind. Is that it?
That's with Tanya Leon.
Ah, okay. Wow. All right. And then acting, how did he win? Wow, long time.
A long time ago.
Yeah, I remember him. Philip Hastings and then Lloyd Richards. Yeah, scene setting. Yeah, wow.
Well, it sounds like a lot, but I feel like I've been in limbo for a little while now.
No, you haven't, Betty. Your work is known and it's
just time out
beautiful.
With my three children and my husband.
Uh-huh.
So,
uh-huh.
Hey, look, that should be on there. That was my job.
Remember the days of the Leaguers where we were in?
Didn't we have a wonderful time?
Yeah.
It was so special.
Yeah. I remember those days. So much has happened since then. But we are going to be going to talking with Glenda Taylor. She's going to be calling in here to the show. Glenda is an author also. She's been on before. She has a book called Truth Beyond Illusion. I'm going to pass it to you.
I'm very looking forward to meeting her, too.
And I want to tell people that your book, now where is your book? Is that my book of yours that you gave me?
No, these are mine.
I have.
And I don't have any of those left.
I brought it. And you had written the one you had given me one.
The Spirit Weaving.
Yeah, but you also gave one to Gus.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what I brought tonight because I couldn't find mine in the bookcase. But that's Spirit Weaving, and I was reading some of the stuff again, your poetry again. It was absolutely beautiful.
Well, I'm trying to get to the next piece of material.
You've been working on it?
Oh, yeah. I'm always working on something. But I try not to, just rush and throw anything out there.
Yeah.
I'm not in a hurry, and I want to always, say something a little better.
But you've been doing readings for different jazz artists.
Oh, yes. And
Tell me about that.
Well, my big effort has been doing other people's poetry.
Uh-huh.
I did a lot of that.
Yeah.
Read more of theirs than mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy that too, sharing other good works. But working with Rasanya, speaking that was so special. We tried to be kind of in the mode of Langston Hughes and Mingus. Remember how they worked together?
Yes.
And it was a very unusual meeting with him. You mind if I just tell you?
No, of course. Yeah.
What happened was I was teaching creative dramatics at the time in the East Orange school system. And I happened to...
Is that what you were teaching for a while anyway?
For a while.
Yeah, okay.
I was teaching creative dramatics.
At the same time I was in Newark teaching at Old Providence.
That's right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And we happened to be working on the triangular slave trade.
Mm.
And I thought, you know, let me give this another dimension. And I used Rahsaan Roland Kirk's Spirits Up Above.
Oh, boy.
And I had that playing in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some improvisation going on with the talking about, you know, the movement from Africa and the Caribbean to the United States. And at the end of the lesson, a very lovely young lady said, "That's my father." I said, "Wait just a minute." Wait now.
Uh-huh.
So we started to talk, and to make a long story short, I said, "Well, when your mom comes in, I would really love to meet her. She happened to have been in Australia at the time." Dorthon Kirk. By the way, can I just interrupt to say this?
Sure.
Starting, I think, October, Dorthon's place is going to be at the New Jersey Performing Arts Center.
Really?
I believe in the Chase Room. Every once a month, Dorthon's place will have her own production, her jazz. She has done so much in the field of jazz, bringing artists to Bethany and Newark and different things. Anyway, I said, "Well, ask your mom if I might share some of my poetry with Rahsaan Roland Kirk," because I had heard his music, loved his music, and I thought, so she was very upfront to say, "I don't know how to handle this. I want you to know he's very honest." So, if you're thin-skinned, you better think about it. Yeah. I'm paraphrasing her, of course. Anyway, we shared poetry. He was so, receptive. And some people, you know, you don't have to feel threatened by.
Yeah.
It's not an examination. It's an exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very open to listen to different things.
So you were getting some good vibes from him.
Getting good vibes. And later it worked into my work with him, with the lyrics for theme for the Ulippians.
What about the Geraldine Dodge's arts festival? Have you performed with them yet, and are you going to?
Well, many years ago, I had a very small part. I did some introductions at one time when Gwendolyn Brooks would come. I introduced her a couple of times, but never.
We have a caller. Excuse me. We have callers. Sure. I'm going to go to them in just about 10 seconds. So just finish your story and tell me.
I never performed directly, you know, with with the Geraldine Dodge.
Yes.
I've always been a part. I've always been a part of it, and I've always promoted the poets coming.
Yes. Yeah.
That I told you, I have been more cheerleader than, you know, performer.
I know, because I was at, you know, the festival last year when I went on the day that Amiri was there. You know, because, I love to hear
him. It was fantastic last year.
It was. But we have a caller that we're going to be going to that call, Betty. Maybe somebody wants to talk to you. Or it could be Glenda Taylor. You know, she is our other guest tonight today. And you, too. I want you all to talk, because there are certain things that we want to get across. Are you there? Caller, are you there? Hello?
Yes. Hello. I'm here.
Now, let's see. We have two callers on the same line.
Sounds like it.
This is Glenda.
Okay, Glenda's on one line, and Gina Payne Scott is on the other line. Glenda Taylor. Hi, Glenda. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you. Glenda is an author and a writer and a poet. She's put out Jelamuso's Drum, and, you know, we have talked about that before. And it's about Black African-American artists who are what Glenda calls a cultural historians and griots. And this is Jala Musa's Drum, and the book that you're looking over there is her book that she's done with Jeff.
It's beautiful. Look at these beautiful photographs.
We're looking at
Glenda. Hi, Glenda.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm fine.
I'm looking forward to meeting you. These beautiful pictures.
Aren't they beautiful?
Hello.
We're also going to be saying hello to Gina Payne Scott. She is the co-host for tonight also. And okay, Gina, are you ready to roll?
Hello. Hi, Niels.
Hi, Gina. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Welcome to the show. Listen, right off the bat, I have a comment and a question that I'd like to pose to you both.
And to Glenda.
You were going to say, everyone, what?
And to Glenda. Glenda is also on the other line.
And to Glenda, yes, to both of you. First of all, as an aspiring author myself, I would like to know, as authors, and I think a lot of people talk to me about this, as an aspiring author, I've written for newspapers and written position papers for political parties when I was living in Bermuda, also writing for the newspaper. Again, I've had aspirations of writing a book, but I'm curious to know, as authors, as published authors, how much do you write for your audience, or do you write for yourself? Do you have a story in your mind, in your heart, that comes out, and when you are writing, do you think about how the audience will receive it, and does that change what you might write?
Okay, let's have Glenda answer that first and then Betty. Glenda?
Well, it really depends on what I'm writing. When I wrote Blind Light, I did that for me. That's a book of poetry, and I did it because I was just pouring out my feelings about a particular phase and period in my life. And when I did Truth Beyond Illusion, which is the book of photographs, I did that for the audience because I wanted people to see how African-American women looked and how they dressed from the 1860s to the 1950s. And I wanted to, you know, release the images and make the images available to people. So it really depends on what I'm writing.
It really depends on what I'm writing.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And Ms.
Neal? Well, usually we are one. Usually I am one with my audience. I find the things I'm thinking about, you're thinking about. Some of the themes our people, our culture, our histories, our stories from our parents, our concern about our children. I think I don't feel so estranged from anyone, really.
Uh-huh.
So I just try to deliver what the Spirit gives me at the time.
Spirit, and we come to your book, Spirit Weaving. But the Spirit weaves at the same time.
Now, there are some things I would deliberately like to write that I want to share about people. I think I happen to be a people historian. I love to study people. I love to see what makes them move, makes them want to share
what they have. It sounds to
me
like you and Glenda Taylor have a lot in common. Am I right, Glenda?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, expound on it. Just said yes, I think so. You never just use one or two words when I talk to you.
Well, I'm interested in history, American history and culture, and preserving the African-American perspective. I don't want it to get lost. That's why I did the book of quotations, with the quotations from people like Thurgood Marshall, Hank Aaron, Muhammad Ali, because I think it's important that we preserve that history. And Truth Beyond Illusion was another version of that. It was the photographs from a period of images that we don't normally see.
Yeah.
And almost a drum that was I saw so much value in the autobiographies of African-American artists that I thought that history and the story they were telling, it shouldn't be lost. So I was determined to do that. We do have a lot in common when it comes to the history and the culture.
Yeah.
And ideas. I'm really excited about so many ideas we have. I think of, let's just say, Dr. Cornell West.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like to try to get into his head about what he's saying about philosophy and how he can bring all of these people from different schools of thought, from different parts of the world, from different approaches to life.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to listen to that.
Mm-hmm.
And lately, I've been trying to find out what Dr. Neil Tyson is saying about Space Chronicles.
Yes.
Because that's all a part of us.
That's
all
a part
of
sure
our history.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's all a part of finding out where our strengths are. And,
Well, before we talk about Glenda and your Jella Musso's drum, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes.
Gina, you know this. I've showed this to you before. This is about Glenda has interviewed, researched the African-American entertainers. And she maintains through that book, along with a few other people, that they are cultural historians. Because people like Eartha Kitt and Aretha Franklin, and, well, you tell it, Glenda. You can tell it better than I can.
Well, basically, the book is a study of the autobiographies of African-American female artists. And it shows how in their autobiographies, as they tell their story, they're telling an American story, but they're also preserving an aspect of American history from the perspective of African-American females that you don't normally read when you read traditional history books. And that's primarily what the book discusses. And it's fascinating history. Like, say, for example, Etta James, who just passed away, she tells you a lot of details about when Sam Cooke passed away. And because, you know, she went there and she was following it. So there's a lot of information that you'd read in her autobiography that you would not normally, you know, find in a history book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, why do you call them, or why have, or I forget who had referred to these African-American entertainers as cultural historians. I found that absolutely fascinating. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Well, the word griot is, there has many definitions, but one of the meanings of that word is someone who, through the oral tradition, which is, you know, Africans, is someone who tells history, and they're telling a story. And you'll find that in the autobiography, these African-American females, they are storytellers. They are preserving our history in their books. So that's what it's based on, that concept.
Mm-hmm.
Like, say, for example, Sissy Houston tells the story of the migration of Black people from the north, from the south to the north. And you learn a lot, and
there's
a lot of history in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Can I interject here? I would like to encourage also, because I believe firmly in the idea that that Black entertainers are cultural historians, and I would like to encourage very specifically Kay Thompson to write a book, because I know from a very young child when I went around, Kay Thompson also being the host and my mother, when my mother was first on Cablevision, New Jersey TV3, and there were stories that my mother brought to the audience that we would otherwise not know about. You know, having interviewed people like Dr. Ivan Van Sertima, Dr. Yosef Ben Yakinin, Len Gunther, Dr. Clark, and the list goes on and on and on. But at that time, there was no Oprah. Oprah was my mother. Not to date you, Ma, but clearly you were doing what Oprah did, and Oprah did in a very big way. But you were doing that a long time ago. Also, the other thing is my mother's an entertainer. My mother's a ballerina. My mother was an actress.
Ballerina.
And, she was.
and my mother, I mean, really, with along the likes of like Alina Horn, we like to think anyway, like Alina Horn, and when Bill Cosby talks about his wife, Camille, we always picture my mother. And my mother was there during the time when Alvin Ailey started his revelations, and my mother had a ballet school. This is culture that we don't know about. And so many ballerinas, so many entertainers have come through the Thompson Dance Studio, which was my mother's ballet school. Then my mother, of course, went on to WLIB. And I don't mean to go on about my mother, but really as an objective person, I learned a lot. I learned a lot, really, from listening to all of the stories and all of the information that my mother brought forward. It is a cultural history, and it needs to continue, and I'm glad for the show.
Well, I agree. Your mother definitely should write a book. I mean, even if you use a ghostwriter or do like most of the entertainers, they don't necessarily write the books themselves. They do it with someone else or someone writes it, and they tell the story. Because you have too much history. You know too much history. You've experienced too much history. Because when you were telling me about the civil rights and the March on Washington, was fascinating. And you're telling stories that, you know, most people don't know. They don't remember this.
Well, I thought that you made a great observation during that conversation, because I was telling Glenda Betty about when I went to the March on Washington. Donald, my brother-in-law, who just passed, Congressman Donald Payne, he always got assigned to me by my ex-husband to do certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And, for instance, he used to have to pick me up in the morning and take me to the state because we were teaching in school at the same school. And during the March on Washington, Donald had the instructions to don't lose K because there were so many people there. But I was telling Glenda that because I said, you asked me, Glenda, very specifically, you said, well, what did the people look like? What did they dress like? And I was telling you that my feet hurt because I had worn a pair of heels and I was wearing these dopey white gloves and I had the skirt on. But the people who participated in the March on Washington had such respect for it that they came dressed. They were dressed. They had their suits on. They had their dresses on. And there were, of course, people from different parts of the country who weren't. But the point is, you know, we all respected the fact that we were there for this great and marvelous occasion.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Glenda just found that, you know, that was, you know, part of the whole cultural
Absolutely.
Thing of Black people.
And, Kay, going back to our work together in Newark, remember we as young people were part of the reason Irvin Turner was elected the first Black councilman.
That's right.
We had to ring doorbells.
We're really dating ourselves, aren't we?
Aren't we?
You would have to tell that.
And the first Black mayor.
Yeah, that's right.
But we had assignments to do those
that's
things.
Right.
It wasn't like, you know, we're sitting around trying to be glamour girls or something.
Yeah. No, we were working.
We were working.
In political campaigns.
Absolutely.
That's right.
But I like what Glenda said about the musicians, and she called two people I dearly love.
Yes.
You've already called Aretha,
and
you know it's my dream to do something comprehensive and beautiful about her. Well, that's another whole story.
Well, you have poetry, where you've written,
and then she mentioned Sissy. And being from Newark, you know she was our pride and joy.
That's right.
And there's a whole lot of love in the history we give out.
Yeah.
But I like what Glenda said, and I love her almost telling our history through the fashions.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we were
in
ladies.
In that book, isn't that somebody? Yeah.
Absolutely. We were women and ladies.
It's beautifully done. You know, it's so amazing about that book, Glenda. Let me see. What's the name of it again? I see it all the time. Truth Beyond Illusion. Is that they all look like family.
Could be anybody.
Could be any of our family. Really, the book is, what is it, in sepia? Is that what it is? It's black and white.
Yes, black and white.
Pictures. Mm-hmm. Very little dialogue. In fact, there's no dialogue except at the front or the back. But it's nothing but pictures, and they tell an entire story about a whole era, what we looked like and what we dressed like at that particular time. We weren't all, you know, looking a certain way, you know?
It's beautiful.
Can I tell another interesting observation that I made? Growing up in the suburbs of Maplewood, New Jersey, I and my brothers and sisters were often the only Black child student in the class until we got older, then it became more integrated. But I always found it interesting that people had this view of African Americans, you know, a negative view, because my experience at home was completely different. I'm going to tell you something that probably sounds hilarious, but I having grown up in, doing ballet with my mother, I had no idea that white people did ballet. And because all of the best ballerinas that I knew came out of the black community.
That's right.
And my mother had master classes, you know, again, with Alvinelli, Arthur Mitchell, Thelma Hill, and the list goes on. And
you,
so when I was in Maplewood, and I happened
to Lavalon.
Yeah, coming to Lavalon.
And I happened to pass by the Russian School of Ballet, and I looked up and I saw a whole bunch of, you know, Caucasian people, and I laughed to myself. I was like, oh my goodness, do they know how to dance? Because and not really realizing that, you know, I guess ballet was originally a Russian thing. But my experience was so different. I had such a positive experience being a black American living in an all-white community.
And that was because
so culturally, I think that's
African
important.
African dancing, you know, had several instructors and who were, you know, excellent in African dance. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that was the time when Ola Tunji had come.
Oh, yes.
You know, and he was the first time I remember having a class with him in Soho. And he was a lecturer at that time. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what he had come for. I only heard his name. I was involved with the Collegiate Council of the United Nations, you know, when I was in college. And all I know is this big, tall, very dark-skinned man who looked like he had gold in his cheeks. You know, because playing the drum, and he was talking. He had this big drum, bigger than I was, and I was in love.
Weren't we all?
I was hearing those drums, and I'm telling you, know. But it was really great. So, therefore, when we had the Thompson Dance Studio, it was only normal and natural that I would bring in, you know, people to as master classes. For instance, Arthur Mitchell was there. Arthur Mitchell's mentor, Carl Shook, came to our dance.
Mm-hmm. Carl Shook.
Remember Carl Shuck?
Mm-hmm.
And then Thelma Hill. And then, Arthur Mitchell was there, Thelma Hill, Carl Shuck, Tommy Johnson, Richie Landrum, who played the drums, you know, and so many.
And
people.
You know my love for the dance.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah,
you know, I traveled with Marie Brooks for years.
Yeah.
And my daughter was with the junior company of the American Theatre Hall.
Yeah. And I had interviewed Marie on many occasions with those kids, you know, and when she was going to different African countries.
Oh, she's
with
a
them.
Phenomenal person, isn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah. She was amazing with them.
And a lot of people don't know about the whole cultural thing that was going on in Newark, New Jersey. For instance, the jazz and then the gospel. It was really the gospel center of this area.
You couldn't grow up in Newark and not know music.
Do you hear this, Glenda?
I mean, Sarah Vaughan was there.
I was
living,
just listening to some Sarah. I was just listening to a record by Sarah Vaughan. In fact, there was some footage that I found.
We happen to have the same birthday.
Really? Sarah was singing Misty. Can you imagine
that? She could sing anything.
And then they had named Sarah Vaughan Way in front of the New Jersey Performing Arts Center.
That's right.
And Gina, you may remember this story, and Glenda, I don't think I've told you this story. My other daughter, Lisa, said, Mommy, I met Sarah Vaughan's daughter. I said, oh, great. She said, I met her in California. I said, oh, great. She said, and her name is Paris, right?
Paris?
I said, Paris? I said, no, her name is Debbie. I said, what are you talking about? So she said, no, her name is Paris. So I said, look, I know that Sarah only have one daughter because she used to bring her to the dance studio. I knew her as Debbie. Anyway, we had gone to the mall, Lisa and I, Gina, and we were picking out shoes, and we went into a store, and I said, oh, hi, Debbie. And it was Paris Vaughan.
All right.
I didn't know that was her name, or she had changed her name.
Mm-hmm.
And she turned around to me, and she said, nobody knows me by Debbie. How are you? You know, so... That's my Sarah Vaughan's daughter.
Yeah, we had a lot of
I had jazz. Whitney and Sarah Vaughan in the dance, John's daughter in the dance school.
And Tisha Campbell.
Tisha Campbell, yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Now ask me if they could dance. That's another whole story.
Mm-hmm.
Tisha can dance. Tisha still dances.
Tisha was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Whitney, not so good, but she was gorgeous. And plus the fact that I remember hearing her sing one time at the church.
Oh, boy.
And, I mean, I was just in, you know, seventh heaven, so, you know.
I heard her sing as a little girl.
Yeah,
I call 11, 12.
Yeah, yeah.
Just beautiful. Yeah. We have quite a history in Newark.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so glad there have been so many wonderful things.
Exactly.
Being focused on Newark now.
Exactly. I don't know if I have a break coming or not. I don't see anything up on our board here, but so we can continue talking. Mm-hmm. So go ahead.
Yeah. No, I just wanted to put that little plug in there for Newark.
Yeah.
And
when's the next time you're going to be performing?
I don't know. I just did a performance at Sisters with
Wow.
And her string quartet. We had a lot of
Very
fun.
Exciting. Mm-hmm. Very exciting. Very mm-hmm. exciting. Glenda?
Yes? Glenda,
still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
What, are you going to jump in here somewhere? You're unusually quiet.
No, I'm here. We were just talking about all the news. I was just saying, we have a lot of news. I didn't hear. What happened at 6 o'clock? What did the prosecutor announce?
Yes, it's happening, right?
Yeah, we were on that.
Yeah.
It almost made me late.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to get some clarification.
Yeah, I missed it. Did you hear what she said?
Second degree.
What happened is they charged Zimmerman with second degree murder.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good.
Yeah, so he's currently in custody. Whether he'll bail out or not, we don't know. But Al Sharpton came on and spoke about the fact that he did not trust at first the governor nor the prosecutor to do the right thing. And finally, I guess after their proper assessment of, you know, the details of the case, they finally did end up with the charge of second-degree murder. And so the Zimmerman is currently in custody. And, Ma, you told me earlier that his lawyers had dropped him. For, you know, whatever reason, I guess there were too many holes in his story or what have you.
I think the story was that he had just disappeared, you know, and walked away from his lawyers.
And we can say this is a testament to the power of the people.
Oh, yeah.
Because
that's right.
I think if we had not taken the interest and, you know, moved it along, it may have gone unnoticed.
You know, and this goes to our energy, what we get energy from when we're writing and, you know,
it's
you know,
spirit
you do your poetry.
Weaving.
And,
it's spirit weaving.
There you go.
This
there
is what go. I mean. I have a whole idea of how the spirit moves and can really take over when we don't know that's what's happening.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was such a global movement.
Mm-hmm. And when with people, with certain people that we're in, can you and Glenda and you too, Jean, can you feel, I used to do this when I was at LIB, I would sense someone's energy as soon as they came into the studio. And it was either negative or positive or like just floating around. And I reacted, and I couldn't feel where that was coming from. But I was able to read people very quickly.
I think you have that talent.
Well, what about you as a writer? What about Glenda? What about Gina? What about you guys?
Oh, I just hang out in the air and whatever hits me, I respond sometimes.
Yeah, I actually do. I do have, I guess I get that from you. I have sort of a sixth sense, and you know, you hear people talk. I hear Ms. Neal's talking about the spirit is very true, or people call it the energy, or you know, the Holy Spirit, or whatever you want to call it. But I absolutely have the ability to feel people's feelings. So that's the feeling, their energy. So you kind of feel whether there's some authenticism or not in people's stories or in their experience.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't know if that's a cultural thing or just or an individual thing or what, but I hear you speaking about
the spirit. I think it's both because, like, for me personally, it, you know, it's gotten stronger, but you just feel, and some people, like, I remember one time, because, you know, I like antiques and things like that, I went and I was on a Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn, and my mother and I were getting ready to walk into this antique shop. And we were like walking, and all of a sudden we stopped, and we literally could not go in.
Mm-hmm.
There was something with the energy that was so powerful, overpowering.
Wow.
And I love antique shops. In other words, you just literally had to turn around. So some people pay attention to it more than others.
Yeah, and you would not go into that, or you would not go into that shop, or you did, or what?
I couldn't. It was something, it was a strong, overpowering thing that said stop, and it was amazing.
Yeah.
Because my mother and I experienced at the same time.
Yeah.
And whatever it was, in that space, energetically, it, you know, we couldn't go in there.
Yeah, have you gotten that feeling at one time or another?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Different times, you know, or you sense something with your children or your family or other people, you know. I remember stopping at a green light and saying, not even saying anything. I sit there a second. Along comes the car at 100 miles an hour.
Uh-huh.
Now, I've heard other people tell that story. You know, the same thing.
Yeah.
They just stopped.
Uh-huh.
And you don't know why you did it. But I think we are very sensitive people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think we had to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fact that we survived meant that we had to be aware of things without necessarily calling attention or having to identify it or just leaving it. Mm-hmm. And I had a grandmother who was laying on the hands, person. So I just, you know, came up with a respect for people who understood things that I didn't know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, sometimes we think, and I'll just say it kind of like with this academic approach to everything, that we know more than we know.
Yes,
but
we do.
I loved being around older people, and I found this in different countries in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
People who know, you know, who just know. They can look at you and size you up in a minute.
Yes,
or they also know what route to pull up for you, too. So all of that kind of knowing is just so special to me. And I think as I have grown older, I appreciate it more. When I was young, you know, I would say, oh, what is my grandmother talking about?
Well, I have a tendency to, I can tell when someone is coming up the stairs, even before they get on the stairs.
I knew you were going to say that.
And I can also tell, for instance, Lisa was down at Hampton, and I saw her. And I call, and I call this phone, and, you know, the phones in colleges, they're in the hall, you know. And somebody just picked up the phone, and she said hello, and it was Lisa. And I had thought her name before, and of all people to be passing by the phone at that particular time, but that happens to me. And people will say, oh, I was just thinking about you. And I said, I knew you're going to call.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, when I talked to you, I think it was the other day.
Oh, we do that often. We do that often. And we had an exchange years ago, remember?
Yeah.
That would be another conversation.
It completely. Yeah.
So, Glenda, tell something else about what you were saying about us as cultural historians and artists as cultural historians and musicians. Something you were saying I didn't want to let go, I wanted to hear more of.
Go ahead.
Primarily what I was saying is how, if you notice, like a lot of black artists, that they tell stories, and they're telling our history in those stories. Like, John was talking specifically about autobiographies. But, for example, Nina Simone, when you really study her lyrics, I mean, she's talking about Martin Luther King's death. She's talking about the lynchings. She's telling the history of a very specific period of time from the 60s and the 70s, and she's telling, you know, what we were experiencing at that particular time.
Yeah.
And she preserves it. She really does. She does an excellent job of it.
Of course, And when we look back, we'll be able to see those dates.
Mm-hmm.
And see how it corresponds to what's going on at that time.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I like to make...
Yeah, because Mississippi, there's a song when she wrote Mississippi Guy Down, that as a result of the killing of Medgar Evers.
Yes,
and the bombing of the four little girls.
Yeah.
She was so angry, she had to express that in her art.
And the things that you write about...
What was the name of that? What was the name of that particular...
Mississippi Goddamn.
Mississippi Goddamn by Nina Simone.
Right.
Yeah.
So powerful.
And you could hear it on YouTube.
Yeah.
She one of what it means to be free. She the king of love is dead. That's absolutely beautiful.
I remember being in an audience. I don't know if it was at Symphony Hall in Newark, Betty. Or not, but somewhere where she sang that song, and it was around the period where, you know, so many things were going on. And when she said Mississippi Goddamn, I mean, the place went up.
Absolutely.
You know, everybody
yeah.
just responded mm-hmm. because of that mm-hmm. feeling that mm-hmm. you were holding inside mm-hmm. and you knew you were angry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
you're
listening mm-hmm. to this singer, and when she said, Mississippi, goddamn, mm-hmm. it was just such a powerful statement.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
we're all, you know, tuned into this connection, this mm-hmm. cultural connection you have being with your own.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I've said that before, you know, when I can go into an African American area, I feel very comfortable. Now, it may be rough, it may be this, and it may be that, but there's also a level of comfort there, mm-hmm. you see? And I've had that feeling for a long period of time, mainly because of the fact that when we're very young, we've heard things about racism in the South and what whites have been doing to blacks, and that stays with you. You don't forget that stuff, you know, as you grow older. You wonder about it when you're younger. You may not have directly experienced it, but the point is that times we did, and then when we didn't, you know, you still relate to the other people we're talking about.
Absolutely. And then you see how it was over the world.
Yes, exactly.
First, we saw it in our isolated country mm-hmm. or community.
Mm-hmm.
But then you look at the world and see what has happened with us
mm-hmm.
and to us and how generous we have been. In
yes, and that's a key word, how generous we have been,
well,
you know,
I'm being
in returning,
polite.
You know. Yeah, mm-hmm. you're absolutely mm-hmm. right with that.
Yeah.
So go ahead. Hello.
I'd like to mention, first of all, I really appreciate this conversation. I appreciate listening to you, women who are, you know, a generation before me. And I'd also like to point out that there's a wave of younger people who are as interested in our culture and our history as I am, and I'm happy to mention. I know Tylon Washington, who is the producer
oh, yeah. mm-hmm.
of your show.
Yeah.
He's very much interested in you know, preserving our history also, and also there's Matthew Kirkland, who's a very dear friend of mine, as well as George Moore, who has the CircusTV.com. I'm sure there's many more, but Matthew Kirkland, if you go on Matthew Kirkland's Facebook, or if you go on George Moore, thecircuittv.com, or Brownstone, and then also Tylon Washington, Black Wax, these are some, you know, younger people who are very much interested in preserving our culture and talking about the disappearing voices in radio that Tylon has done, which is a video that we should all look at, and features my mother amongst many other people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I really, really applaud you women for keeping this alive and just letting you know that I am one for not putting people out to, you know, oh, they're older, we need to move on to the next generation. I really love to pick the brain of people who have been here before me and appreciate it. And there are many of us out here who are interested in that. So,
that
you know,
is
I applaud so you and I appreciate
wonderful.
This.
That's so wonderful. And as she was talking, I was thinking of people probably between her age and ours,
mm-hmm.
like
mm-hmm.
Janice Harris Jackson
yes.
from Kane.
Yes.
She's
yes.
very
yeah.
active.
Uh-huh.
Well, now she's been writing quite a bit since she retired. As a matter of fact,
mm.
the Star Ledger just carried her article on the millennial woman,
mm.
which was very
oh.
interesting.
Oh, I'll have to look at that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And I think of Bobby Riley.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
who was a councilwoman in
yes.
Montclair.
Sure.
Who did what they could do, and they haven't stopped.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
just we take different approaches, different times,
mm-hmm.
and the whole thing is realizing that all we really have is each other.
Yeah, exactly.
If we can, you know, if we can keep that in mind.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
that is
we
so
do.
True. What about the art of visualization? You know,
mm-hmm.
now I have used that, and I know there's a book that Glenda, you had sent me years ago. And I don't know if you remember that. It was The Art of Visualization. And you said you were telling me that I was a very wealthy woman. Read this book.
Wow.
And shortly after reading it, you know, and me absorb, you know, just soaking up, you know, what Genevieve Beiran had to say about the art of visualization. In other words, you visualize something that you need, you want, and it comes true. And I've used that many times before, and it's happened. And it really, really, of course, you have to say a prayer with it. You know, so, but the art of visualization is actually visualizing something, seeing it, wanting it, tasting it, feeling it. I wanted a car at one time, so I sat in it, not really physically, but
mm-hmm.
in my head, I sat in it,
mm-hmm.
I saw the color, I was driving, I smelled the leather, I think Lloyd Strayhorn also was one of the people who had told me that.
Mm-hmm.
And I eventually got the car that I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So and I said, wow, this stuff works. Have you experienced anything like that with visualization, either of you, any of you?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
I know again. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
I experienced that with my daughter before my daughter was born. I always like to say I knew her at conception, which is really funny. But I knew this child at conception. Literally, I was like, boom, that's Brianna. I know what she looks like. She's going to look exactly like me. She's going to be exactly like me. And sure enough, to this day, I've got tapes of when I was pregnant and my family was calling her Brianna. And I never got checked whether it was a girl or a boy. Sure enough, it was Brianna. She looked exactly the way that I thought she was going to look. She acts the way she... So we basically are living parallel lives because she's a mini-me of 20 years ago. So, I mean, I visualized that. But before you go on, can I change the subject? Because you are authors, I want to pick your brain about author books and things. I recently read lots of books, but I recently read Uncle Tom's Cabin. Now, I know that this book is extremely controversial. But when I read the book, I was amazed at the depiction of this Uncle Tom, and from whence that whole thought of the Uncle Tom came from. And reading the book, I understood where why Uncle Tom was Uncle Tom, and then also about I think her name was Anna, who had to jump over the river to get to the freedom land. And I just want to know who was it? Somebody, Harriet Beecher Stowe, was a white author who seemed as though she exaggerated some of how some of the blacks were and all. But I found it to be very culturally interesting. What do you all think about that book?
Yeah, I think, and I'm going to kind of tread lightly here because I want to ask you, would you think that Uncle Tom, the way it is written, is how it turned out to be later on? I mean, this Uncle Tom is such a put down as we speak about.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you got from the book?
Well, to tell you the truth, what I got from the book was I understood him in context of where he was at that time.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the context of, he was a Christian man. He was a Bible reading man. And in the Bible, it tells you if you're a slave, you'd be a good slave. And, he did whatever he needed to do. A, he was not stupid. He did it for survival. He had to follow suit, for survival. But at the same time, as being a good Christian person, a God-fearing man.
Yes. Yeah. I think where he eventually wound up in terms of how we used it was not really like the book.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But it came to be such a, I want to say a negative person. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that was the intention.
The intent. Mm-hmm.
And this kind of, also makes me think of how we laughed at Aunt Jemima.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I think let me tell you something. I met, I don't know if this was the original, but I met Aunt Jemima, the woman on the pancake box.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She had a horrible experience. I mean, people put her down.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, the way we did with Louis Armstrong when he first started the thing, right?
That?
He was
just
a clown.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm saying sometimes when we get a chance to look at something in perspective, we reevaluate and say, how did this connotation get there?
But wasn't that coming from the way whites reacted to those people? To those people, meaning the entertainers or the people that they gave a negative assessment of them and passed it, to black people. And black people also, then came down on those same people. I could never understand that.
Mm-hmm.
I could never understand that.
Yeah, that happens.
That's an interesting observation.
That happens. One way to convince me of somebody else's idea is to make me think that is the idea.
Yeah, exactly.
So
exactly.
People who are working for the cause can also, be termed violent and ruthless and this and that, when what they're really trying to do is have you see the light.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Very, very interesting observations, though, you know. But I find...
Yeah,
go ahead.
I don't have a problem with books like that. I just think that what I do have a problem is that there were African-Americans writing during that same period, giving their, you know, version of reality, and most people don't know their names. It's just like a lot of people were upset about the film The Help, and I don't have a problem with a white woman, you know, writing the story and telling the story, but it's just so many African-Americans who have written or could have been given that same opportunity,
right,
to tell that story. Because to me, the women were courageous, but I would have liked to hear that voice from the perspective, and I'm not saying that the writer who did it should not have had the opportunity to have, you know, those actresses play a role. But
well, she was writing that from her perspective, though. That was the whole thing.
Well, she claims that she had entered, but some of the stories that she was told, a black woman told her those stories.
Yeah,
and she's the one that put it on film. Mm. And someone said to me, it's kind of like with, with what happened with Hitler in Germany. I mean, would Jewish people really want to hear the story of Jews written through the perspective of the eyes of the Germans?
Yeah, exactly.
They want to see the Germans put it on screen?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you know, there are many talented Jewish writers. Who could tell their own story.
Their own story, that's
right. But again, I don't fault the people who, I mean, everyone has their own perspective, and I kind of liken that to, like, you know, a child's a boy and a girl who grows up, and you're teaching your child, your daughter, that she has to like dolls and the boys have to like cars. But as an individual, if her interest is in looking at types of cars and models, I can't fault her perspective. She has a perspective also. Mm-hmm. Just like, what's his name, Steven Spielberg got criticized for doing The Color Purple. If I'm interested in the Holocaust, and I go to Germany and I learn all about, and that's a personal interest. It doesn't matter that I'm black. I have a perspective on it. I live in Bermuda. I'm not Bermudian, but I can tell you a lot about Bermuda. Now, would a Bermudian say I shouldn't be telling this story? I'm not telling their story. I'm telling my story, my perspective of what I can see. I have a right to learn about the world and make an opinion on it.
Right. I think he did an excellent job with that. I think he did too.
Yeah,
I think he really did an excellent job.
I think it shows the responsibility we have to tell our stories and to write.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of us worry about being talented enough or capable enough, but let's just tell the story.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
I agree with that. Yeah.
And there's so much to tell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you feel like, you know, when I know, for instance, in doing radio and television, and especially radio daily, the people that I interviewed they were all just absolutely fascinating. And the stories that were so negative, you know, were also fascinating to me because I felt that they had to be told. And people had to hear them, and they really had to see this part of life that was not pleasant. But then again, at the same time, you know, when we were bringing so many of our people on, our artists and whatnot, I knew how pleasant it was, and that they were also part of what Glenda calls the cultural historian. For instance, what was his name? Singer, Gil Scott.
Aaron?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When he did, you know, his revolutionary songs, you know, and people were, he was telling a story.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a way of rallying. Mm-hmm. You know, and of course we all know that, but you know, you have to sort of absorb that. For instance, I had a very different look at Song of the South.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and I'll tell you about that again, but I have that. Mm-hmm. I'm not supposed to have that film, I don't think, but anyway. Can we hear one of your pieces?
Do we have time?
Yeah, I think we do.
We have
about maybe, how many minutes do we have? Just about 1 minute?
Oh, wow.
No kidding.
Oh,
wow.
Well, I don't know if I have something that's 1 minute long.
Well, do you have something short that we can hear, Betty?
Oh, dear. Let me just see. Oh, my goodness. Let me see.
You have to end the show in 1 minute. I'm telling you. While Betty Neal, who is an author and a poet, is looking it up, I'd like to say thank you to Glenda Taylor once again. Thank you to Gina Payne Scott for your very important insight and intellectual discussion. And thanks to Betty Neal.
Well, since I'm a part of all that is yes. and ever, this, no, soul, alleluia. If it is in the tree and dwells in me, then I am a part of the tree. And the tree is part of me. Alleluia. In the bird that flies, in the blue of the skies, in the red of the sunset of the day that dies. Alleluia. It is the thunder, the patter of the rain, the drop, the soil, the dust, the crop. It is that I can be born again, again and again. Alleluia.
Oh, that's fabulous. Yeah. I love that.
That's beautiful.
I didn't get my Aretha poem in, but hello.
We'll do this again. You know, I was talking to one of my dance students, and her name is Cynthia Kennedy. And Cynthia has a dance studio. I have to say this because, you know, I taught them, I stole a from the Ellie's Choreography Revelations. I'll say that another time. How we do. Never mind, Gina. And Cynthia Kennedy's dance studio is Effusion Dance Collective. She's located on Lafayette Avenue in Hawthorne, New Jersey, and she has classes in modern dance, contemporary jazz, ballet, tap, African dancing, hip-hop. She's one of my former students. So, Cynthia, congratulations for your studio. It has high-quality dance education, and she has an email, so you can call. Oh, her phone number is 973-949-3930, by the way. She's in Hawthorne, New Jersey, and she has quite a dance background. Also, her website is www.effusiondancecollective.org. So congratulations, Cynthia. That is absolutely great.
And thank you, Glenda.
Thank
you. Nice meeting you and Lisa.
Yeah, nice meeting
we
you
have
too.
To Gina.
Gina.
Yes, I appreciate talking to you and hearing your insight. That poem that you just read was absolutely beautiful. I'm going to make sure I read your book.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. We have to end now. Thanks, Glenda. Talk to you later. Thanks, Tina. And thanks
for
right out there. Thanks,
Peace
Betty.
And love.
Okay.